Today we'll be talking about the strong CP problem. I think like one of the only lecture which is mostly theoretical. The rest of them are either very cosmological or like experimental. So today we'll be talking about a phase, okay? Or a couple phases. So the first part, I will be telling you like the strong CP problem from the theoretical side, and then the second part will also like be mostly experimental side. Okay. So I was told you have all worked on pions, which is good, and in your STEM model class, I hope you have a look at the CKM matrix. Yes? No? Okay, so like which is the flavor symmetry of the standard model, and for some SUN flavor symmetry or like cross SUN flavor symmetry. So symmetry, what we learned from hopefully the standard model class when we think about the CKM is that there are angles and phases which are physical, right? So in SUN, you will have this many angles. You know this formula? Yes? No? Good? Okay. And then phases, this is how many you have. Okay? So for SU3, n is equal to 3, so 3 families of the standard model, you have 3 angles. Those are the 3 CKM angles. And then like one phase, which is the CKM phase. Or, yeah. So these are the mixing angles, these are the phase. Okay, so, so today we won't go that complicated. We are only going to deal with one flavor. So we'll be looking at one flavor QCD. So you might already know like many of these things, but let's just go through this in a little bit more detail to understand like all the angles and phase. So the one flavor QCD has, of course, the kinetic term for the left-handed quark. There is the kinetic term for the right-handed U quark and D quark. Okay, and then we know like there are the Yokawa couplings, right? And also this Y up, and then the Y down. Okay. So so and then like when we look at this formula and we forget about the if we forget about the SU2 cross U1 gauge symmetry, then like basically I have like the Q, which is basically the Q, and then like the QC, which is UC and DC, right, at low energies. And then, like my Yukawa couplings, when the electrical symmetry is broken, gives me a mass matrix for the quarks, right? So, so basically, like I get at low energies, basically this, okay? One for QC, and then like a mass matrix which couples Q and QC, right? And the mass matrix here is equal to M up and down, since we are only interested in the first generation. Okay, so if you look at this Lagrangian here, then you know there are the flavor symmetries, right? So I have SU2, well, like a I have a U2 cross U2, so I can do a U2 rotation of the Q, and I can do a U2 rotation of the QC. If I only consider the first two terms, right? And the symmetry can be broken down to SU2 of vector symmetry, SU2 axial, U1 vector, and then U1 axial, right? So if I only look at the kinetic term, I can do a U2 rotation for all the fields. I have all the generators in the U2 cos U2. And I can break them down to the vector symmetries and axial symmetries. So the vector symmetries are when the quarks rotate in the opposite direction, right? Which is a symmetry that is preserved by the mass term. While the axial symmetries, when you rotate like you rotate these q's in the same direction, and as a result, the mass term breaks it. Okay, so. So the breaking of the SU2 axial is basically the reason for the pions, right? And their masses, okay? So the SU2 axial is broken because of two reasons. One is that the QCD confines, right? So QQC get a expectation value. So this is a spontaneous breaking. While on the other hand, this SU2 axial is also broken by the mass matrix, which is explicit breaking, right? Okay, so these are some things all from the standard model class. I just want to review this part. Okay, and once you have a system which has both small explicit breaking and a larger spontaneous breaking, then you can do the Sprill analysis. And first, forget about the mass, right? And you have a QQ bar condensate, which breaks the SU2 axial, give you three pions, right? So you get three pions. So this is pi zero, pi plus minus. And then we also get, then like you can consider the mass term, and the mass term will result in a mass for the pions, right? So from the mass term, you know like the m pi is basically some mq times f pi, right? So f squared. Okay. All right, so that's the Sprill analysis for the SU2 part of the symmetry of this one flavor QCD. Then there's also the U1, two U1s. Okay, so the vector symmetry is good. But like the SU, it's basically the SU2, and then the baryon, this U1 symmetry here is basically the baryon number, right? So the quark number is conserved. So the U1 baryon number, which is basically like the Q going to Q e to the I alpha, and QC goes to QC of e to the minus I alpha. This is still a good symmetry, preserved by everything. So, and this is the baryon number. While there is one last symmetry, which is the axial symmetry, U1 axial, which goes as like this, right? And this certainly is no longer a good symmetry anymore. Like the SU2 axial, it is broken spontaneous by QQC, right? Condensate. It is explicitly broken by the mass. But the symmetry is even worse than this SU2 axial because it is broken no matter what you do at in the IR. It is a symmetry which is broken in the UV. Do you remember why?
because the current is not conserved.
Okay, so there's an anomaly, right? So that's the basically the ABJ anomaly. Right, okay. Okay, so we know the U1 axial is not good symmetry. Good, because of the anomaly, right? And the way you see the chiral anomaly is that when you do this rotation, right, the Lagrangian goes to it's not invariant, right? It is goes to right, you get something like a theta term, and so the basically like the Lagrangian is not invariant under this transformation, and but like if you remember, the Lagrangian contains a term which is a theta. Keep everything, gg tilde, which tells you that this rotation is basically changing the theta angle of the QCD, right? Okay. The one thing that I want to emphasize is that unlike the case before, where when we treat the mass as the spurion, when I take the mass to zero, if there's no spontaneous breaking, then like the symmetry is good, I get a true Goldstone. Here, like taking theta to zero doesn't restore the symmetry, right? If you want to restore the symmetry, you need to take like a G strong goes to zero. In that case, of course, there's no anomaly because there's no force, right? Okay. All right. So and the reason, like the difference between like this theta spurion and the mass spurion is because the symmetry is nonlinear realized, while the other one is linearly realized. Okay, so hope all these things are clear. So in the case of when I have like a massless quark, right? So I can do all of these rotations as I want, the axial rotations that I want. Then like even if I start with the theta term, I can always rotate the quark such that I cancel it, right? But in the case where there is a mass term, then when I'm doing this Q rotations like this, in order for me to get a symmetry, right, not only do I need to do this, I need to do theta going to theta minus 2 alpha. And then at the same time, I need to go m going to m to the e to the minus I to alpha, right? So which means that when I'm changing the theta angle, I'm also changing the phase of the mass matrix, right? So when I this means that like there is a linear combination of the angles which exist in the mass matrix and this theta angle in front of the GG dual term, which is invariant under this transformation, right? So this means I have some linear combination of theta and the phase of the mass matrix, which remains a constant when I rotate. And the same thing for the QC, right? Okay, so this angle we call theta bar is equal to the initial theta angle we start with plus the argument of actually the determinant of this mass matrix M. Okay. So in the case of the two flavor, basically like when you are doing this rotation, doing this change, both the up and down quark phases is going to change, and then that's why like it show up here. Okay, and I don't know if it was mentioned in the standard model class. Anytime you have an angle or phase which you cannot rotate away, then this angle or phase is physical, right? So this is a physical phase, which in other words, it has experimental consequences. Okay, so that's basically like some math you like that is related to the tutorial you did and also related to the standard model class you you took, but in the end, the important thing is there is a physical phase angle which exists as long as the determinant of the mass matrix is non-zero. So this already. Tells you that one way to make this thing physical is by taking one of the masses to be zero, right? If one of the masses is zero, then the determinant is zero. The angle angle is of like that zero is not like some physical quantity, which means like there is a way that you can do the rotation of this massless quark such that to always cancel away whatever theta angle you start with, and that is. As you will see, one of the solutions to the problem that we'll be talking about. Okay, so that's all theory. Now let's also talk about measurement. So measurement. Okay, so as I said, whenever you have a physical angle or phase, it has some experimental consequence. And the experimental consequence here is related to the violation of the EDM, or almost violation of the EDM of a neutron. Okay, and this is also known as the strong CP problem. And so let's first look at what is C and what is P. Okay, so P is parity, which is a symmetry that relates a vector to minus itself, x going to minus x. So we are interested in the electric dipole moment of the neutron. And we know the neutron has a magnetic dipole moment. So let's say like I just put the magnetic dipole moment and the electric dipole moment like this. So this is a neutron. It has a magnetic dipole moment, mu, and electric dipole moment, which are all aligned either like along the direction of the spin direction or like opposite. Okay. So if I have this picture, I can do a parity transformation. Right. I can go from x to minus x. So does this one change? Does the magnetic dipole moment change when I do x going to minus x?
Magnetic, no.
Why is that?
Integral over like a cross product, right?
Yeah, OK. So magnetic dipole moment is proportional to something like r cross p, right? So there's this one change and this one change, so the magnetic moment doesn't change. Okay? But the electric dipole moment is just a direction, right? It's a vector. So d goes to be like this. Okay, so this is the parity. So so whatever, like I have a dot product between the two, now like it is the opposite. Okay. Similarly, you can do t. And from CPT theorem, you know like this is basically the same as CP, right? in any quantum field theory, CPT is conserved. So we can ask, like, how does this system transform under T, right? So again, does the let me draw like a mu and d under T. So does mu change?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And because the momentum has a time derivative, right? What about d? What about electric dipole moment? No? Yes? No. Okay. Right? Because it only has space, right? So what you see here is under P and T, both, like here, like what you get is mu dot D, right? Transform to minus mu dot D. Well, here it's the same thing. Mu dot d goes to minus mu dot d, right? So what this tells you is that if the neutron, okay, neutron has an EDM, then it breaks P and CP, right? Okay. Or any elementary particle, like electrons, stuff like that. But here it will be mostly interesting in the neutron. Okay, so we're like, okay, so like it breaks and CP, like, and P, like, what? Like, what's the matter, right? Like, okay, so. And like even like if it is zero, like maybe like it just tells me like somehow like the neutron preserves CP and P. But we know the standard model actually breaks both P and CP, right? So what is the experimental measurement that tells me this? So in weak interaction, how do I know like a parity is broken? Huh? Wait, what did you say? Sorry. Down.
Kaon.
Oh, yes. Kaon is actually like more related to CP breaking, no? Like parity. Simple. Li, TDD and CN Yang won a Nobel Prize because of this. And someone did an experiment, no? So this is a proven, well, the SU2 left. There is SU2 left, there's no SU2 right, right? Means like the weak interaction is only coupled to left-handed particles, and that breaks parity, right? So the thing that show that parity is broken is an experiment performed by Madame Wu, where she showed this parity breaking from cobalt 60 decay. Huh? Okay. Where there's a nice Wikipedia page you can go look at, like the history of like these experiments, and how that experiment is so important in our finally figuring out the SU2 structure of the standard model, right? So then CP, yes, as we know from like CP breaking is inside the CKM matrix, right? Like there's a CP violating angle. And as Ottavio said, and this is from KK bar mixing, right? So and how we measured k short decay to 2 photons and k long goes to 3. So these two experiments and also like the theory behind it tells you that both the parity and the CP is badly broken in the weak sector of the standard model, And we know that delta Cp in the CKM, so this angle is order one, okay, in radian. Okay, so which means like in the weak sector, like both of them are badly broken. Well, it's not like only slightly broken, it's really badly broken. So then like the question is, right, so I'm not that tall, unfortunately. Yeah, so P and Cp are broken in weak interaction. Why does neutron EDM measure almost zero? Okay. And there are two parts to this answer. The first one is that in order for the theta angle in the weak sector to enter the EDM of the neutron, you need to go through like a complicated diagram with a lot of Yukawa couplings. And all the Yukawa couplings are very small. It's higher loop. And as a result, though like all of these numbers are like order one or like slightly smaller than one, when you multiply many of them together, right, you need to know all three generations exist, the contribution to the neutron EDM from delta Cp is suppressed by a combination of Yukawa couplings. And as a result, though we can predict like how big like we are going to measure if there's only delta Cp in the CKM, the value is too small, like it's much smaller than the than what we can measure now. So the weak delta Cp is suppressed since I need to access like a bunch by some a bunch of like Yukawa couplings multiplied together, especially the y up and y down, which are very, very small to start with. But as we have earlier, there is also the strong theta angle, right? As long as like all of the quark masses are non-zero. And this angle actually appears, or like a theta bar, as we had before. This angle like actually appears like at leading order, almost directly entering the computation of the neutron EDM. And you are going to find that this neutron EDM you compute is roughly some like mq over f pi times theta Cp. So this is not very, very important, but like let me just put it there. Times the size of a neutron. Okay. So what is the neutron size? What is roughly the size of a neutron? Huh? Planck scale? No. What sets the size of the neutron? What is the force that's relevant?
This is gonna be a couple of Fermi, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, because like a strong interaction is what binds the neutron together, right? I have a bunch of quarks, right? So this size is roughly a Fermi. Okay. So this number, it's like 0.1, 0.01, right? So I have something that's like 10 to the I think like 16. Centimeter times the theta bar. Okay, so Fermi is like 10 minus 13. There is a 0.01, some like order one numbers. In the end, it's like 10 minus 16, like e centimeter. So and experimentally, we can go measure, right? What I find is this neutron EDM is order 10 to the minus 26 centimeter or smaller. Okay, so we actually haven't been able to measure such a value. We just know like there is an upper bound, which is roughly like 10 minus 26. So the theoretical target from weak interaction is like even 10 order of magnitude smaller than that. But somehow this value is already very surprising because it is way smaller than the expected EDM if like there is order one CP violating angle also in the strong sector. So somehow either parity or CP is a good symmetry in the strong sector because this combination tells me that, and the measure of like how good like the symmetry is basically in like this theta bar parameter is less than 10 minus 10, while the delta CP in the CKM is order one. Okay, and if we go back, sorry, here, to this board, right? Like this is a actually like a very surprising because the theta bar we get is a linear combination of like two numbers, so like the theta and some like a phase in the mass matrix, right? So this is a one linear combination of all the phases in the center model, right? While the delta CP is another linear combination of the same phases in the center model, right? So so first, like it is confusing, like even if we say like somehow like this is zero, why this would not be order delta CP? And the fact that we measure zero here means that most likely the delta CP is like order one number. This is order one number, and this is also order one number, which exactly cancels like whatever I have here, right? Such that like experimentally when I measure theta bar, like I measure zero. So so this confusion or like this puzzle of like why the strong interaction which preserves CP or like why this theta bar, which is like a linear combination of a bunch of order one phases, at least like there are reasons to believe that part of it is having some same origin as the weak delta CP is so small is what is known as the strong CP problem. Okay. So that's the problem. How can we solve it? So So the first thing that is possible is actually like a, if true, would be quite elegant. Is that like a, maybe not all the masses in the center model is non-zero. What if like M up is equal to zero, right? So and then people realize like we actually have like no clue like if M up is equal to zero or not. Back in the time when we realized there is a problem, strong CP problem. Now we know like it is non-zero, but back then like we really don't know like MRP is equal to zero or not, because the meson masses that we measure is always equal proportional to the sum of two quark masses, right? So if you remember the pion mass goes as m up plus m down, right? Times f phi, times some 4 pi power. Like all the rest of the meson masses is like a linear combination of two quark masses. So well, this phase is only relevant if all of the quark masses are non-zero. So. So the first solution is like, what if like M up is equal to zero? It doesn't violate any of the other measurement, but it will be okay like for us to you know have I said like make like the theta bar parameter like infinite call. So of course now we know like this is no longer a solution. And because like of many lattice studies, because but also like the baryon mass differences between the proton and the neutron, right? For example, is sensitive to the mass differences instead of only like the mass sums, right? So these studies and and the measurements up to now, like it tells us like this is no longer a solution. Like both the quark, up quark and then the down quark has to have a mass. The m up is order 2 MeV, though there's still like some uncertainty. And then the down quark is roughly 4 MeV, which is like a factor 2 bigger. So, okay, so this is no longer a solution because it's experimentally excluded, right? So experimentally excluded. Okay. So the second solution, which is the main topic of the rest of the lectures, is the axion or the QCD axion, which is the idea that there's nothing I can do if this theta bar is just a parameter. But if I somehow promote it to a dynamical degree of freedom, then maybe like in the early universe, the cosmological evolution would automatically relax this theta bar to zero. Okay, so this is the idea that I want to relax. I want to make like this thing somehow a function of time, in a way which is in a way that at a late time, I get to see the bar equal to zero, right? So that's basically the idea, and the question is how we actually make it work. So the pictorially, when we are thinking about the strong CP problem, and when we are asking the question about the EDM of the neutron, you can, so this is a very classical picture, which is not very, very accurate. But like you can think of it as the question of how these three quarks inside the neutron is arranged, right? So the neutron consists of up quark and two down quark, right? So, and these three things can arrange in, for example, different ways. One, let's say like a way, like I can think of it as something like this, right? So in this case, I have a positive charge here, I have negative charge on the other side. So so I get an electric dipole moment, right? So, but if I somehow is in the situation like this, right? Then there's no electric dipole moment, right? So this one has a dn equal to zero. This one has dn non equal to zero. So if I just think about this pictorially, then maybe I can think of this angle, right, or like this angle here, which is zero, as a proxy for the strong CP angle experimentally, right? I'm like, okay, this maybe give me some hint, like okay, so like I want like this angle to somehow prefer to be zero, right? So neutrons I know not very much, right? But like there are things that we know very well, which all have like these angles in their binding structures. What type of things?
Could you repeat again?
So like the neutron, like it's very hard to think about like, oh, how these quarks are arranged, right? But like there are some things that we know, like in like everyday life, we deal with them all the time, okay? That somehow like share the same type of pictorial structure as the neutrons that we are drawing here. What type of things?
I know water is like this, but
Good. So she is drinking was drinking water, right? So water is like this, right? H2O, right? And this is carbon dioxide, right? So, okay, so these all have different angles, right? But interestingly, right, they all have like a fixed angle that is not preset, right? So if I throw like two hydrogen and oxygen in a box, and they form a water molecule, they are always going to form with exactly the same angle, right? No matter if I put them like in this form to start with or not, right? They will always want to relax to this form, right? And the reason is one, theta is dynamical, right? Right? So, okay, so that sounds like the axiom now, right? Like I'm making like the theta angle dynamical. And so now like it will relax to the minimum, right? So I want to make sure that theta equal to 0 is the minimum. Right? Okay. So if I manage to ensure these two things, okay, then once I turn like the theta angle to a dynamical variable, then like it will relax to 0 as in the way that I want. So that was the basically the idea behind the axion solution. Okay, so now first, like how do I make it dynamical? Well, like maybe this angle, which is in front of you know, gg tilde, this theta here is not just like a parameter, it's a field, right? So that part is easy. And then like the second day, how do we ensure that the theta equal to 0 is a minimum, right? So this is complicated. And in one of the later tutorials you are going to do, you are going to show that we can write down, once I promote this theta angle to a field, then going through the Carroll-Lagrangian computations, you will be able to show that the potential for this new field from the Carroll-Lagrangian has the following form. Okay. I think it's a part of the tutorial, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to do like a bunch of like what's it called? Like an angular, whatever, like the sine and cosine functions. Okay. But like this is the answer. Which I'll write on here. Okay. So here, like I'm dealing with. So since like the pi plus and pi minus are charged particles, they always have zero VAF. Well, now like I can have a field which is the theta, and then like also the other neutral component inside the one generation QCD, which is the pi zero. Right. Okay. So you're going to find something like this, and where this sine phi as a function of theta is equal to m down minus m up okay so this is the answer of the tutorial, but like I think like you'll have some fun like trying to derive this. Today we're just going to inspect it and see like what type of properties this has. So as I said, I wanted two things. I want to make sure that the theta is dynamical and the theta bar is the minimum. Okay, so which basically means like I want to find out like what is the minimum of this e theta function, right? So first, I want the cosine, right? So I want to do something with the cosine. The cosine should be plus 1. That is.
So how did you write down the Lagrangian again?
Huh?
How did you write down the Lagrangian again?
So basically, like you are, you have so in, well, this is the tutorial, but like the in the when you are trying to write down like the pion masses, right? What you have is this plus like this, right? Where U contains like U is some like e to the I sigma, where the sigma contains the pions, right? And then like you expand it, right? To get to the pion mass matrix. But now like the theta angle appears in the mass matrix, and it is a field now, right? So now instead of three fields, you are dealing with the mass of the pion with three fields. Now you have four. So you want to find the minimum of this V, right, which is proportional to this, with four fields, right? So now you can get rid of the charged ones and be left with the neutral ones. And when you are working with the neutral ones, then basically like you will have this function by setting like a pi zero in its minimum. And then like in the end, you are just left with the e theta, right? So yeah, so that's how you do it. But like you are going to have some fun like doing going through this computation.
It's not as hard as it looks.
Yeah, it's not as hard as it looks. It's just like some cosine and a sine, like, and you just do some like splitting. But okay, assuming like you have worked it out, let's just like inspect some like properties, right? So the first thing is I want like this thing to be equal to plus 1, right? Such that this e theta is as negative as possible, right? So this doesn't actually tell me very much. This just puts like a pi 0 in its minimum, right? OK, so this puts pi 0 in the minimum. Then you are looking at the cosine theta and the sine theta part. So this thing, of course, so like a cosine squared is 1 minus sine squared. So you can rewrite it as 1 minus like 4 times m up, m down, m up plus m down, square times sine squared theta over 2. OK? So you want like this to be again like as big as possible, right? And this is always positive, so you want sine squared theta over 2 is equal to 0, right? So this basically means that theta equal to 0, 2 pi, right? Right. So what this tells you is this potential is 2 pi periodic, right? Okay, so it's 2 pi periodic. And luckily, like theta 0 is equal to 0 is a minimum. Right? So this tells me like I have a chance, right? It doesn't tell me like I've solved the problem. It tells me I have a chance. The basically, like if I manage to promote this to a field, and then like at least the minimum is at the right location, okay, that removes CP violation. But of course, like I need to, so there's the minimum question, but like there's also like how fast you go to the minimum, right? Like whether it takes like, if it takes infinite amount of time for like this field to settle into its minimum, then basically I've done nothing. So next lecture, we'll be talking about how it actually settles in the minimum. But today, let's just make one more comment. So like here, like we see like if like both quark masses is non-zero, then this theta if I promote it to a field, then like theta equal to zero is a minimum. But now, if like one of the quark is massless, right, just as we talked about before, then basically like this whole quantity is zero automatically. And once pi unsettles it's into its minimum, e theta, no matter what is theta, is always minus one, right? Okay. Independent of whatever theta angle you have. So what this tells you is that basically the theta field is totally flat, right? There's no potential for this theta field. And which means like this particle becomes a true ghost zone, right? There's no difference no matter like where I am in the 2π like winding directions, right? So and like if you have something that doesn't depend on theta at all, if all the energy spectrum doesn't depend on theta, no physical properties depend on theta, then like this is another way to see like at this point theta becomes unphysical. Right. Cool. And just as we expected before.
I have one question.
Yeah.
So I understand. So like if so we wanted like a theta is equal to zero as minimum because that's the angle between the between u and dd, and that's fine. And theta is equal to zero would ensure that like EDM vanishes.
Yeah.
But like how so why is this theta is z theta?
Oh, so this is just to give you like pictorially like what I want to do.
Yes.
Like in a true neutron, right? This is not how it looks. Right.
Yeah.
Because like and you can like okay, so and you can see it because the valence quarks, the up and downs are very very light, right? Their true mass is like 2 and 4 MeV, while like the proton is 1 GeV, so it's like 1,000 times bigger. And the reason is like most of the energy is inside the energy of the force of the strong interaction, right? So which effectively makes these quarks much heavier. So the like what you know inside the neutron is like there is two more quarks than anti-quarks, two more down quarks than anti-down quark, and one more like up quark than like anti-up quark. Like the how many like a quark there are, right, is not like a good degree of freedom anymore because it is strongly coupled. So, but like,
so we just wrote down EFT for the theta angle.
Yeah, right. So like, and then like the way like you can act. So this is pictorially like you can to help you imagine like how this theta angle looks like and what we type of things we want to do to make sure that the EDM is zero. But like to actually compute right what how the axion potential looks like. I shouldn't be using the UV degree of freedoms, which are the quarks and the gluons, right? I should be using the IR degree of freedom, which are the baryons, the mesons, and the axion. And that's why like we transitioned between the picture with a bunch of quarks, how they might like look like inside the thing, in a strongly coupled series, so it doesn't mean very much. To like a description which includes like the pions and the theta angle, and then like to find out like how the potential structure actually look like.
So if I know how to solve strongly coupled systems, and if, for example, if I know how to solve confinement,
yeah,
I should be able to explain in theory the theta, right?
You will be able to see also from the strongly interacting QCD theory. How does the theta enters like into the EDM?
Okay.
and stuff like that. But like now we don't. So we use the low energy effective field theory, which is the basically the Cairo Lagrange, right? This is difference. This is basically the, I forgot to say, like this is the it's a great question. Like there's this is the difference between these two pictures, right? Because in molecules everything is weakly coupled, right? The fine stretch constant is small. Here, like it is not. So in principle, like this picture is not correct. But like it's a good analogy to help you like understand like what is happening. Yeah. Okay, so what do we do today, right? So let's summarize a little bit. So what we looked at are basically the strong CP problem, which is the problem about this starting from like the U1 axial symmetry. It actually has some relation with the eta prime problem. Why it is heavy, and then like we understand like there's an anomaly with the quark mass matrix that has like if all the quarks are massive, then like there is a combination of all these phase rotation, which combination of the angles which is invariant under all the phase symmetry or like anomalous symmetry like a rotation you can do. And this angle is a linear combination of this theta term in front of GG tilde, and also the argument of the determinant of the quark mass matrix. We understand like if a phase is or angle is not able to be rotated away, whatever you do, whatever phase like a symmetry transformation you do, then it is a physical and it has to have like experimental consequences. We talked about the experimental consequence, which is the like the neutron EDM. We see like why a neutron EDM would be a sign of like a violation of PNCP, and we understand like these two things are like a badly broken in the weak interactions, but somehow the measurement tells me that these symmetries are good symmetries under strong interactions. And how this is basically the strong CP problem. Then we talked about like possible solutions that people contemplated, one that didn't work because of measurement telling me like it didn't happen, and also like the axion solution, what it requires from the field theory side, which that theta equal to zero is a minimum of the potential. You're going to work on how this thing is actually obtained. But like if you believe me in writing down that form, then like this is the potential that we want. And now the question is, given with this potential we want, how does the action actually behave in the early universe, which is the theme of next lecture. Okay, so next time we'll talk about axions and as a misalignment mechanism. Okay.
So I have one question.
Yeah.
So like how QCD became accepted theory when it, because like people were like working on strong interactions from '60s, right? And like so what QCD did to like convince people? Like I guess so because like
so. So like yes, good question. Like I think like it has like many steps, and I think like there are two main steps. The first step is like get people to think about the QCD, and especially to think about the quarks. It's the thing called eightfold way. Like it's a nice book like written by Gell-Mann. Where like he collected all the evidences which lead him to think that there are quarks and gluons. Okay, so in there, like basically, like the source, like the experimental information which got him to think about these things is the mass spectrum of all the mesons and baryons, and how somehow like they satisfy things called sum rules. You know sum rules? No, okay. So the sum rules is basically like a bunch of rules between the mass of the the mesons. It's kind of interesting. So we already said like the mass of the pion is some like m up plus m down times f pi. Like there are some like coefficients, odd one coefficients. But like then like you can also, if you extend to like not only like a two flavor QCD, but like a three of like so I include also the strange quark. Then like you can also have mesons like eta and kr, right? So they all have like different dependencies. I think like the kaons are basically like a light quark plus m strange, k plus minus, and then like k zero goes as like m down plus m strange. Okay. And when you collect the structure, what you see is like there are ways you can linearly combine these mass squares of the mesons such that they somehow become zero. Okay. So like meaning like if I take like two of these, like this plus this minus like this to some like a time some integer minus that to
numerically
go to zero, right? And that gives you a sense of like the group structure, right? And these group structures eventually convince him like there are like not only like so these baryons and mesons, they are not like elementary. There's some structures inside which consist these mesons and baryons are consist of, and those are basically like the quarks. So that's the first thing. And then, like once you know, like there are quarks and then there are gluons, then like the second thing that eventually convinces people, I think, is asymptotic freedom. So where like people realize that eventually, like if at low energy, like the SU3 confines, which gives rise to all of these complicated things. But like when you go to higher energies, they should be asymptotic free, meaning that when you are doing like the scatterings, like you will be able to see like the structures which like a scattering cross sections, like what you see in like a QED scattering, because like at high energies, alpha S is not very large anymore. So that gives rise to people understood like asymptotic freedom is a possibility, and then like it is also confirmed by data.
So is asymptotic freedom, convincing or vice versa? Like confinement, so like since they are like coming here, confinement is more convincing, right? So like in IR, like it generates
the
scales.
The confinement, the combination of the data. At that point of like both things that can go free at high energies and also like become strongly coupled at low energies. And then like there is a simple theoretical framework which actually does that.
Yeah, I'm always wondering because like for QCD is always advertised for asymptotic freedom. And like we also found that like SU2 is like asymptotically free in Paris UV as well.
Yeah.
So asymptotic freedom is not a pro. It seems like it's not quite a pro. QCD, but the fact that like it combines and like that you get variance out of this, that's the big problem.
That, like that is a bigger problem. But like both of them like are confusing. Like I think at that point, I didn't live through that time, so I'm not totally sure. But like I think like these are the two building blocks which get people to realize, oh, like this is not just like a theoretical hallucination is like a really something that happens in nature. Yeah.
Okay. So Gilman had like this quark picture.
Yeah.
The gross symbol check like Norwitz like expands like by this.
They showed like a simple like a non-abelian gauge group would have all the structure you need to look like the data that people are collecting back then. Yeah. And then like people discovered the gluon. And then like people discovered the gluon in DAISY in three-body decay. If you want, I can explain some of these experiments. Like, I don't know if people talked about it. Did people talk about it in the Santa Barbara class? No.
Stop talking about it.
Huh?
10 years ago, they were talking about it.
No. I mean, like, in the lecture.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They didn't, this year they didn't, but last year they did.
Yeah. So
back when they would talk about the
The gluon is how we discovered the gluon. I mean, if we have time towards the end of next lecture, I will say something about how we found the gluon. Okay.
So what we mean discover gluon?
We discovered the decay product, angular correlation of the decay product of some states, which tells you there's a vector particle, which carries color. But yes,
so
it's complicated.
Quarks are not observed themselves, right?
What do you mean by quark are not observed themselves? Meaning you always see mesons, is that? Yes and no. We never seen a quark, free, right? But in the measurement at collider, you actually know because you were at high enough energy that the quarks are there, but then they carry color. So when the quarks go out, the correlation between the energy distribution inside the calorimeter, for example, carries information about what is the force between the two particles which are coming out from the scattering vertex. If there is a quark, there are two quarks, then there is some attraction between them, right? Which is changes their angular distribution. So from those measurements, we actually know some of these objects called jets are from quarks. Some of them are from gluons. They at high energy, they have to be free quarks and free gluons. But depending on what you mean by we see, we cannot see it because our probes are all very low energy. But yes, we know they existed from the correlation pattern that they created earlier.
We can look at Shang's notes. It's in the standard model class, and he talked about it, I think, and he also talked about the deep elastic scattering.
Deep elastic scattering, yes. So it's an experiment that's run in DAISY in Germany, which gives rise to most of these understandings. Yeah.